Good morning. Today is Wednesday, August the 24th. Joining us this morning, Humboldt County Supervisor, Mr. Mike Wilson. Good morning.
Good morning.
You enjoying August thus far?
Foggest?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know who flipped the switch on Monday, but holy cow.
I like it.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what summer used to be, right?
It's not even that cold, actually. I was out last night. I mean, it was like a foggy blanket. It was very,
yeah.
It was nice.
I've often wondered. I've never been to London, England. Mm-hmm. Have you guys?
I've been there, yeah.
So the Sherlock Holmes, for me, the Sean Dillon series, all those that talk about the foggy streets of London and the clap, clap, clap on the cobblestones.
Yeah.
This is what I think of when the fog settles in and it's a little drippy.
I have to say, like, I remember it as a younger person, you know, in the 80s, as a teenager in Arcata and in Eureka. And I thought it hung much lower and more ominous, and there was more of it. This is my memory, but I could be wrong. I have to look at the data, but that's how I remember it. Hey, maybe it was just, you know, who I was at the time.
Yeah, that's all right.
My goth self.
Yeah, I can imagine you as a goth.
I was goth adjacent.
Okay, yeah. Couple removed, huh?
Mm-hmm.
All right, are you ready for Why Do We Say That?
I'm ready for Why Do We Say
Why Do We Say the better half? Someone's a better half.
Well, I would assume it's the assumption that of the couple as being a whole and the other person is better in general. Don't we usually refer, isn't it usually like in gender-wise, like the male is referring to the female
as the
better half?
The other half of the couple. Yeah.
And I would say there's probably some data that would support that.
I thought you were going to say personal experience would support that. Score some points at home here.
Yeah, you know, confirmation bias.
Yeah. Oh. Puritans and other zealots brought many religious terms into common speech. Doctrine said that the soul and body together made up the person. Since the spiritual self was considered more important, it came to be called the better half. It took a genius to see the new meaning in an old expression. In writing, Sir Philip Sidney applied it to the husband-wife union rather than the body and soul bond. Long used to indicate either partner in the half-and-half match that is marriage, the inherited term was modified by male gallantry. For some generations, every husband with a spark of love is called the woman who makes up 50% of his life his better half.
Oh, I knew there was some sort of
a body and soul kind of
patriarchal.
Body and soul
BS
works, too.
With that, I guess.
Yeah.
All right, sure.
You better go to church on Sunday and make up real fast on that one.
Nah. Yeah. I don't have to make up to the Puritans. I'll be fine.
No. I wonder. There still must be Puritan sex.
What?
In existence. S-E-C-T-S, smart guy.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Brian.
Yeah. You like that little slide in there, huh? Okay.
Where are you taking this show? It's early, it's too early in the morning.
Yeah, some more coffee. We'll see what happens.
I think we better move away from the Puritans.
Okay, fair enough. Let's move to the windmills. How's that progressing? Are they doing the EIRs and all that kind of preliminary stuff now? Is it beyond that? What's the status of that project?
Well, the offshore wind, I mean, currently it's in the leasing phase, really for the work to be done related to really the studies that have to get done and all that kind of work. So that's happening. It's gone through the permitting phase with relationship to the, you know, to
the onshore side.
Yeah, well, the offshore siting, where it's going to be and those sorts of things. But really right now it's really about getting the data in terms of the siting of everything. And so there's just
so really in the early stages then.
It's in the early stages, but there's a lot of work being done with preliminary work around Humboldt Bay area with relationship to how, you know, the configuration of the onshore facilities required for assemblage of these things. And there's a study being done by the Coast Guard looking at, you know, what kind of, and if there is a need for new dredging associated with the channels and that kind of thing.
Additional or more frequent?
I believe, you know, the actual geometry. So, you know, really looking more closely at, well, what, how big are these things?
Can it fit?
Can it fit?
Kind of the question,
and,
yeah.
And if it
yeah.
doesn't, then what would need to change to make it work?
How so critical with the dredging? I know I'm, you know, it's not, this isn't Supervisor Wilson. This is former Harbor Commissioner Wilson we're talking with.
Yeah.
The channel, as it's defined now, is pretty well recognized.
Yep.
Is it a big deal to make it a little bit wider or make it a little bit deeper?
Yeah, it's a big deal. I mean, you know, just from the permitting perspective and cash, yeah, for sure, money. I would say there's, I don't mean cash, but, you know, definitely funding associated with that. I mean, when I say, is it a big deal? I mean, it's a process. The environmental big deal about it would only come out in the analysis. I mean, I can't predict that necessarily, right. But, and
you just don't do it willy nilly. It's something that's a significant process.
Yeah. And even the dredging, when you see the dredger that's out there, that's doing the maintenance dredging, it is monitored on a real time basis through satellite connectivity, the data in terms of where it's dredging to really like to the inch. And so it maps as it dredges to the inch, like every second, right? And as it's moving through that space, it's processing a ton of data. And so it's basically, they know exactly where, what's been dredged and where, when they dredge it to literally to the inch. And so they're constantly doing that. And that's how close they're able to actually get the dredging to its permitted location. It's very, very precise.
When the dredge happens, I know we really are unfamiliar with it, but is it 90-degree angles?
No.
Are they slopes that happen? I mean, what is it?
No, it's
if we took a cross-section, what is it? Is it a U? What does it look like?
I think it's about what you might think it looks like. In terms of, like, you have to understand that material slumps, and so you have to account for that.
Okay. Yeah. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
Hi there, and good evening, and welcome to the Jim Bohannon Show from Westwood One Radio. We're at 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-505-4626. Weekdays at 7 p.m., it's the Jim Bohannon Show. I'm Jim Bohannon. Join me here on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Mike Wilson. Mike, when you are considering some of the different challenges at the wind turbine project, is that what it's... What is the reference, the normal reference for everybody?
Offshore wind.
Offshore wind project. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to write that one down. What are some of the major elements that they have to still achieve before it gets to the point of a decision? Yes or no? You'd mentioned the leasing is part of it. Some of the reports are going on. You spend a little bit of time with the dredging to see if it's physically possible or if there needs to be adjustments.
Right.
I mean, you can think of a whole myriad of different elements that could just keep this thing in studies for 25 years before they could get to the point of a decision.
Well, there's a few levels or phases associated with the project. The first is, I think it's about 150 megawatts of power, which is about 12 windmills, which is about what we would produce, you know, what we would use in Humboldt County. And that's considered sort of a phase one of the project. And that has a certain level of challenges associated with it that we'll have to deal with moving forward.
Just because of the size or the amount of energy?
Really related to the technology in general. It's a relatively new technology, and so it doesn't mean it doesn't exist. It does exist on the planet in a few locations, and it's functional and working in those spots. We have our own challenges associated with our own geology and geography and everything else.
So some site-specific issues.
Very site, yeah, yeah, site-specific, and challenges associated with transportation and other things. But those seem achievable in the short term. The bigger question is the access to something on the order of, many times that, probably 10 or 15 times the what we're looking at in terms of like the getting more of those wind turbines offshore. The issue is delivery of the electricity from here to outside this space. So really, the infrastructure to deliver electricity onto the grid in California,
making the project worthwhile. Well, for the investors, then.
Well, making the next phase of that project available. I think at that scale, it probably really is very worthwhile, because the bigger you scale, the less cost per kilowatt delivered, or megawatt delivered.
You got more wiggle room.
Right.
Sorry, basic stuff over here.
Yeah. So whether it's an undersea cable going north or south, or whether it's new cables, moving across to the valley, that's probably the biggest engineering challenge we have and permitting challenge we have in terms of expansion beyond what we could produce for ourselves.
With the fiber optic line that was brought in, are there lessons from that that can be applied to this?
No, because moving that kind of electricity is done up on towers.
It's up out of the water.
Yeah. Well, no. Just
bringing it to shore.
Yeah. No. That's bringing it to shore isn't a big deal necessarily. In the scale of what we're talking about, it's really moving it from here to the urban areas where you would need that, or from
Humboldt Bay to Redding.
Yeah, just into the grid. So yeah, we have a grid tie that comes in. It just doesn't have the capacity to move that much electricity in the other direction, or even in this direction currently. So it can move some amount of megawatts, but it can't move what you could produce offshore.
Is that a PG&E issue? Is that a PUC issue? Is that private entity issue?
It's really a state and fed issue.
We would solve, or that the company.
Well, when I say we, I mean this community is definitely part of that process. I mean, we have some of with the Shots Energy folks and with our Redwood community.
RCEA,
and all those entities, and even the county. We have it's an amazing amount of firepower, intellectual firepower, and involvement here locally. But the funding required and the permitting required really is at the state and federal level in terms of that capacity. So that's really the biggest challenge externally. We do have to, even if we build assemble here these 15 turbines, it's not unlikely that by that time that happens, you'll see other projects either in Morro Bay or to the north that will also need assembled turbines, and we have a space that would be ready to go and be exporting those. So it's not unlikely that would continue, whether that export is outside the area.
So it could just be a manufacturing facility for these things then.
I think more also, of what you might consider an assembly.
Well, okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so that's sort of what we're looking at in terms of the future, and understanding that's it's not a small impact to the community to see these things. They will see it's not we're not going to see them from. We're going to see them offshore when they're built. You'll see, but they'll be very small. You'll see them off on the horizon, and you know,
right on the
yeah.
curve.
You know how when people say, "There's that joke," you know, I squish your head with your two little fingers right, with your fingers, that sort of thing. That's kind of what you'll see. The what we'll really see them is close by.
It's 8:30.
It's going to happen.
Stand by playback.
And now.
Live. Real Red Meat Radio.
I keep forgetting I'm president.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS. News and information time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Humboldt County Supervisor Mike Wilson. Mike, with all of the different challenges that are going on out there, what is the status at this point, or have you been updated at all with the county and working the budget and narrowing that gap? Are you feeling any more confident with the numbers that you're looking at for the budget that will be passed in the next few weeks by the county?
Well, definitely the reports I'm getting back from staff with relationship to trying to wrangle in and get a lot of these the reporting done that was...
You're wearing your cowboy shirt, so you can say wrangle.
There you go. It's not my Wrangler shirt, but it definitely is, it's got the pearlies on it for sure.
Yeah.
So there's progress being made, for sure. And I think we're... getting a lot closer to getting the reports out that need to get out. There's been a lot of communication with the state agencies that have had some anxieties around this, and I believe that there's a lot of movement there. There's a lot less anxiety within the departments about these various situations that we had with relationship to the audits and those sorts of things. So things seem to be moving forward in. Yeah, as quickly as they can, and so I'm feeling optimistic.
The county, you have to pass the budget by October 31, or is it October 1?
Something like I can't remember right now.
Okay,
it'll come to us when.
So you got a little bit of time. There's still more time to get more information.
Yeah, and again, you know, budgets. I mean, last year we had. A similar issue. Budgets are planning documents, and they're only as good as the information that you have. And nonetheless, you still have to make a plan. And so that's what they are. They're planning documents. But the good thing about them is that it makes everyone required to like get their budgets in and try and conform so that we're all talking apples to apples on what we're doing here. And so it's very helpful. The other thing about a budget is I would say it's a moral document too, because it speaks to what your priorities are, where you really, where you want to go in the future. And so I've learned a lot about budgets in the last almost two decades of doing this work, and they're only as good as the information you have, but also then how you use them and check in with them and sort of monitor
the updates.
They're really helpful in that regard. They're just a tool and
a roadmap.
Yeah,
something
like that. It's a little more. Multi-dimensional than a road.
Sure, you're a quarter of the way through. You've got certain mileposts that you're paying attention to,
it's just a tool to basically monitor where everything's at. And
is that the toughest thing that a lot of us who are not in government don't get about government is budget, the details that are in there, what the document provides, what it doesn't provide, the assembly of that information, why you go through the process. Why is there so much time invested in it? Does the regular guy that's sitting out there in the crowd understand that kind of stuff and what it really represents?
It's not what I get most questions about in general. I mean, there's people do tend to, if they are interested in budgets, typically for most people, they're interested in a certain portion of the budget that relates to an issue or something that they're very interested in. And oftentimes that isolated or siloed perspective doesn't take into account all of the parts that are associated with this. And then I think one of the biggest misconceptions that we have that I often run into is that the budget is totally under our control. And so much of what we have or that it's budgeted is associated with funding that comes either from the state or the feds or other funding agencies or even, you know, grants of other kinds, and they're very mandated about what it is and what their requirements are. And so they are to deliver specific services and oftentimes in a specific way. And our discretionary decision making within those is very limited. And so I think oftentimes people are like, well, why can't we just spend, you know, 50% of the budget on the roads or something like that? Well, it's like because so much of it's already you can't take money that the state has given you for some service associated with maybe some other transportation need or for kids literacy project or whatever it is and then spend it on roads just because you have it in the budget. I think that's probably the biggest misconception that I would say that I have to, you know, have discussions with.
So the second level rather than the primary.
Yeah. And so, yeah, like I said, so people are generally like, I'm interested in this particular program or this particular item. And then that's the part of the budget most people are interested in. I mean, there's a few nerds, you know, like myself right, or whatever, you know, that kind of look at that broader perspective.
Or but, dive down into the footnotes on everything.
Yeah, but there's not a lot of what would maybe consider civilian interest in sort of that. There, you know, people, and I think it's good that people are very interested in their individual.
Well, it'd be daunting to try to master the entire document.
I mean,
you got staff, that's their full-time job.
Yep. Yeah.
Let alone, you know, somebody doing it on a hobby every, you know, a couple hours a week kind of thing.
Yeah. So it's definitely the challenge is in the communication with everybody.
I know this is going to sound goofy. Mm-hmm. Maybe not as goofy as we've already had some statements.
We can get goofy.
Is it detailed enough? Do you get enough of the granular? So if somebody, let's say your road project and they're looking at pulling out transportation funds.
Yeah.
Is the transportation fund so detailed that it says of the budget that we get from this place, we have discretion over this amount and the other amount is earmarked specifically for, you know, in times however many different funding sources there are?
It really depends on your interest level. I mean, in terms
of... So it is available if somebody wants to go to that.
Yeah, and our budget, you know, the budget binder that we work with is a big, giant, thick binder.
I remember seeing those suckers coming
in. Yeah, and so it's detailed. And you have to have some trust. I mean, as a human being, I don't have the ability to consume the data and all of that information at the level that some people might want in terms of how much you spend per nail or per whatever it is. I have to have some trust in my staff to be able to do those sorts of things, but on a broader scale in terms of like looking at where we spend our money, like I said before, our priorities and those sorts of things, like we have to do that. And then occasionally there are some bumps in the road and we have to address
think that if that was someone's inclination to master the budget, they wouldn't be doing their job because there's so many other things that have to happen. And either you trust, as you said, you trust staff or you replace staff.
Right.
Thank you very much. We move on.
Yeah. And there are, I mean, we get information, I mean, comments and questions from, it's considered, again, sort of
the non-electeds.
The non-electeds. And oftentimes it's very, very good information. And it's and something it's overlooked. Oftentimes it's just a perspective. You know, we're all in our lane oftentimes, and we all have this, the constructs that have gotten to us to where we are today.
Our experiences, our ideals.
Yeah, our biases, quite frankly, right?
Yeah.
And so it's good to have folks challenge those biases, to have us recheck those things, whether it's budgetary, whether it's culturally, whether it's
whatever it may
science,
be.
Whatever it is. Yeah. And so,
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:44.
Hi, folks. Fly Humboldt wants to remind you that flying local is buying local. And with airlines going to seven cities serving hundreds of destinations, it's easier than ever to get to where you want to go from Humboldt County's airport. That's right. You can fly on American, Avelo, and United Airlines nonstop to Denver, Hollywood, Burbank, Los Angeles, and San Francisco. Flying has never been more convenient or affordable. So book your trip now. For more information, go to flyhumboldt.org.
Good morning, KINS. News and Information Time is 8:49. It appears as if I'm about to lose control.
That's right. I have a question for you, Brian. So when we sat down here today, you mentioned that you have an exchange student.
Yes.
Can you give me a little bit about that? That's always intrigued me.
Intrigue?
Yeah. I mean, I've had exchange students for a couple weeks here and there. From Germany through the German program at Arcata High. My kids take German there. But I was just wondering, what's your experience and what program do you
have? We have had, I think, 10 or 11 exchange students over the years.
Huh.
The first one that we had was through Rotary.
Mm-hmm.
Mui was with us, and she came from Thailand. And then after that, they've all been through St. Bernard's and their international program. A number of kids from China. We've had, Emmerich was from France.
Do they come for the whole year?
So different, Mike. Mm-hmm. Emmerich, was here for 6 weeks during the summertime.
Okay.
Martin was with us for a full school year plus Christmas the year before. Because they shut down the dorms at St. Bernard's during Christmas.
So you're doing this over and over, it seems like. So you must like it.
It's intriguing. Lewis was with us 3 years ago, right at the onset of COVID, and he was from China.
Uh-huh.
Helped us with the fundraiser for Betty Chin that Betty did. And now Minho's from South Korea.
That's who has arrived just recently.
He made it through the fog last night.
All right. And so is he going to be here for the entire school year? Is that the plan?
School year, the full school year. And for the first time of our experience, he's not a senior. He's a sophomore.
Okay.
So, it could be a multi-year. It could be 1 year. This is different territory for us and for the school because they typically don't allow non-seniors to homestay.
And you've done this so you say 10 students are coming?
10, 11 times, yeah.
What is it what do you like about it? Yeah, what inspires you?
Well, it's probably like what you guys experience. There's the fun, there's the entertainment, there's the education, there's the cross-cultural, all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like we're helping out.
Mm-hmm.
Helping out the school, helping out the kid, helping out the family, helping us out.
Uh-huh.
So it's...
It's an exchange.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I mean, we certainly get as much as we give.
Do you have some sort of, you've been doing this a while, do you have some longer-term relationships that you've kind of kept up with?
Yeah, a couple of the kids are still with us. A couple of them are not.
Uh-huh.
So it just, it's an individual by individual. Probably like what you guys have, there's some that you're closer to than others.
Ours have been just like a couple of weeks. It's not, this seems like a pretty solid
different
investment. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's, I guess it keeps you young too.
Uh-huh.
It keeps us connected to the school.
Uh-huh.
Which.
Are you somewhat empty nesters?
Somewhat. the shirt stuff keeps, Stefan's around a lot, Winston's around a lot because both kids are here.
Right.
But we had extra space. Mm-hmm. So it was an opportunity. And then who says no to Betty?
Awesome. We know a little bit more about Brian now.
Yeah. I'll let you know about some of the food options down the road next time you're in, okay?
Sounds good.
All right, bud. Thanks for coming by. See everybody tomorrow.